Welcome to Emotional Sobriety.
Every week with Emotional Sobriety Podcast is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And I'm just, we're joined today by Alan's new adorable little puppy, Petunia.
Maddie's birthday present, and Petunia yawns. Her little mouth just opens. I know we're just audio, but I'm using my hand to show everybody. It just opens that just a little bit. We could do that for the podcast. I could just sit there and I'll narrate the puppy.
That would give us some emotional sobriety, right? She's soothing me. I can't believe.
Oh, listen. No, that's the first thing I said when I saw the puppy on the screen. I said, it's better than Prozac, man. It's like these little guys, they just change your, they literally do change your brain chemistry.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing today?
I'm good.
Care to expand?
I'll use a line my father used. My dad was a funny man. Not a particularly happy man, but he was a funny man. And he used to say, I don't have any complaints that would hold up in court.
That's a bit of a difference from, where you were a couple weeks ago.
No shit. It's like, and that one thing that Dee Dee encouraged me to do and taught me to do when I wasn't feeling like there was any progress anywhere in terms of how I was feeling, was she says, you got to stop measuring it. And I think this is just good advice, period. And I noticed that, you use this kind of thinking earlier when I asked you how you were doing, Patrick. Is she said, don't measure, if you're going to measure it, she said, don't measure it day to day, because she says, check it out, how'd you feel last week or how'd you feel last month? And that's the way, when I asked you about your knee, that's what you said. You said, the comparison to where I was, a few months ago is unbelievable. So I love doing that. It's because you can really, we really do, or I do, I should speak for myself. What I really do need is to be able to perceive some mark of progress. It really is it really does help my motivation. And I think a lot of people need that. And so we it's a weird thing, but we need to learn how to measure our progress. Don't get in too close. Might I feel, exactly the same or right at the same level of satisfaction as it was yesterday? Yeah. But like you said, a month ago, I wasn't even a normal boy then. So
My resting state isn't usually gratitude, or it's not always gratitude, I should say. But I feel like that is one gift that my past life has given me, is that I don't have to go far to kind of just to recognize, like how much better I'm doing today than I was. How about you, Alan? How's life?
Well, this week has been a tough one. I had a setback on Monday in my physical therapy. I was doing great last week. I was making a lot of progress. They said I was ahead of the curve. Billy took me off my walker and said I could use a cane around the house. And so I was moving, baby. I was doing housework finally, cooking dinner and stuff like that. I'm on my leg a lot and too much. And then I went to PT on Monday and I said, man, I don't know. I've got this pain in my left hip that I hadn't had before. He says, well, it's probably just because you're now standing on your leg more, and the exercises you're doing are more strenuous. And so I understand, we'll do the PT today and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing the exercises and we get to the point where I'm doing hip abductors. I'm laying on my right side. Now understand, my left leg is about 10 pounds heavier than usual, at least, with all of the swelling in it, right? And I'm on my side. So I'm also going against gravity, two things, right? I'm going against gravity, I'm on my side, and my leg is, thicker and heavier than it usually is. I do the first set of 10. And this is, first of all, I knew going in that I was hurting. I told them about the pain in my left.
Yeah.
Then I'm doing the exercises and they hurt. And at that point, I really needed to advocate for myself and say, I don't think I can do these today. Mm-hmm. I think we got to back off. But, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to push through the pain. No pain, no gain kind of stuff. And so that's the mentality I had. I start the second set of 10 on my second rep. I lift my leg and I hear a friggin' pop, man, as loud as can be. And it felt like somebody shot my leg. The pain was instantaneous. I lost all strength in my leg. It dropped to the table. My heart dropped with my leg. I was hurting, man. I thought I had dislocated my hip. He got me off the table and he did a few things. Like, I felt like I was a football player pulled off the field, right? Wanting to see what the kind of injury I got. Thank God it wasn't a dislocated hip. So my orthopedic surgeon's office is just above the PT on the second floor. So he called up and said, hey, can we get an x-ray stat, see what happened to Dr. Berger? Because he really had some problems here today in our PT. So I go up there and they take three different views, and I fractured the femur in my left leg. So I know.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I am, the prescription now is no PT until this heals up. I'm to keep the weight off of this leg as much as possible. And when I do walk with the walker, I'd have to do toe touches. I can't put the weight on the full foot. I have to just go to my nose. And I see the doc on the 19th of March to see what's next.
All right.
It was discouraging. At the same time, it was good news because I didn't dislocate my hip. So I'm not back to zero, ground zero.
Right.
You know, I'm now dealing with the next stage in my recovery, which is this. And so, you know, there's things to be grateful for, things I'm disappointed in. And the other complication that's happened that's probably even more of an issue than anything else that I just described is there's more swelling in that leg now because of
God, I didn't think there could be more swelling in that leg.
So that's hard, man. I couldn't sleep the other night because of it. I got 3 hours sleep last night. I slept fairly well. I was doing fairly well this morning, but now the last hour or so, man, that swelling is really bothering me. It's bothering me up in my leg. It's hurting in my toes. I mean, my God, I just feel like the skin's gonna burst. So that's where I am. So, you know, my emotional sobriety continues to be tested. At this point in time, little Petunia is helping. As I pet her, I think less about my leg.
That's right. You know,
get to focus on something other than myself for a minute, which is really good. So I was looking to join you guys today for a lot of reasons. One is I'm looking forward to what we're doing with this Grapevine articles. You know, we'll continue our discussion today and reading an article from the Grapevine's issue that's been dedicated to emotional sobriety. And we read the chapter, and this chapter today is called Unity Equals Love. And then we see if we can sweeten the pot in terms of what they've said about emotional sobriety and we can bring to it. So you guys ready for that?
Yeah, I am.
Unity equals love. I had never experienced being equal to the people around me. I either felt better or worse. I was really able to see the change when I got to start sharing meetings there. I was so fearful. I felt like I was shouldering the responsibility all alone. But to my surprise, I simply followed the format and everyone else's lead carried me like a wave through those beautiful hours. When I suggested a meeting topic that someone else didn't like and a member said so, when we shared, it was totally okay. The meeting went on without any kind of a crisis or problem. Who won? We all did. To leave the meeting feeling truly uplifted, not on edge from confrontation. What a terrific gift that was. That's been my experience in virtually every AA meeting I've been to. And one way or another, peaceful equalization, a loving kind of leveling. I believe that sense of peaceful leveling has been the most striking to me in prison and jail AA meetings, which I've had the great fortune of attending as a visitor from the outside. We all get to share, and the sense of division dissolves. Those of us who live in the facility and those who will be leaving after it's over, for that moment, are all truly on the same journey, that day of sobriety. Doesn't mean that the circumstances of my life don't matter. Quite the opposite. It means that I can share about my life with those who understand me most, and therefore see my circumstances for what they are.
I love this blessed experience of equality in meetings. I personally don't subscribe to that saying we hear, the newcomer is the most important person in the room. If I took that to heart, it could mean that in fact there is a hierarchy where some are better than others, and that's exactly what Tradition 1 frees me from. Plus, I have a cunning disease that will tell me, hey, I know how you can be the most important person in the room. Wonderfully, Tradition 1 means that I get to sit peacefully in meetings with the members who do believe that the newcomer is the most important person in the room and who find that belief important for their sobriety.
I think it was at my first home group where I first heard unity, not unanimity.
No, unanimity. Unanimity. That's it.
Unanimity. Okay. So, suddenly it became okay for me to simply be whoever my higher power wants me to be, rather than contorting my sense of who I am to fit others' needs, like I had always done before. For some reason, my higher power blessed me with the gift for writing poetry. What a gift it is that so many of my fellows have encouraged my writing. I have hopefully gotten to encourage my fellows to do what they love in their recovery too. Celebrating each other's gifts helps us with growth and gratitude.
Without our 10th step, I could not continue to experience the unity in groups I attend or share this unity with others. Shows me that my mind's silent monitoring and correcting of others in a meeting just goes back to self-centered fear, activating my character defects of pride and grandiosity. Thoughts of mine like, she's cute and newly sober, you should really try to work with her one-on-one, are just lust and codependency, again activated by my fear. And what about resentments that suddenly bite at me inside when I've heard a good friend say something for what feels like the 100th time? Inventory shows me that my disease is attacking me because that's a good friend. Love is both a gift and a driver of my recovery, and my disease fights that. Unity for me is another way of saying love. Without one, I surely wouldn't have the other.
That's my favorite one so far. We are each unique, but we are so much more the same than different. You know, and it's that place where I don't know why I think of this, but I mean, just because my mind is how my mind works. But I had a young man, like probably 19 years old at the time. This was many years, many decades ago now. But there was a doctor in one of my group therapies, and he was, and I say doctor because he was kind of cliche in that way. He threw around that he was a doctor, and he was a good man and somebody that we all loved him in the group, but he was very arrogant. And I remember he was probably in his late 50s. And I remember this young man, 19 years old, sitting next to him. And after he talked, the doctor talked for a little while, he just looked at him and he said, "You ain't so muck and futch." You know, and the doctor just looked, he didn't know what he said. The group kind of was quiet for a minute and then just began to just laugh, just guffaw. And then finally the doctor did too. But it was like, it's always what comes to my mind when I think about this power, the power of humility, you know, that, you know, we ain't so fucking much. It's like muck and fudge. I see. I always forget to turn it around. That's the great connector, the fact that we're far more the same than different. I love it.
Peaceful equalization. I really like that term. What comes to mind is there's a meeting I go to on occasion in the morning where with somebody that I kind of have a beef with, who's kind of sent me angry DMs and stuff. And, you know, I think that we can both get the idea that, you know, we hate each other. I believe I've gone there morning since, you know, the angry DMs, and I've just heard him share, and I felt a kinship that transcends that, you know, like I don't know that we've like stood eye to eye and settled our differences or whatever, but like I still consider him kind of like an ally and somebody that you know, I want to see recover just as I want to see myself recover, especially in our era of rapidly increasing division and kind of like atomization that these recovery spaces, you know, and this is something I'm grateful for my illness, but that it brings me to these rooms or these podcasts. It's one of the few places remaining where we can all kind of be on that same plane.
Well, and we need to expand that because I mean, one of I think that's a beautiful example because I think it's a real, you know, we always talk about humility is reality, being in touch with reality. It's like we don't have to be everybody's biggest fan. We don't need them to be our biggest fan. You know, I don't need everybody to be gushing with love for me. It's like the idea that, you know, what you're talking about is being, you know, feeling benevolence and, you know, expressing compassion. You know, we can do that for people that are not our favorite people. That's an achievable goal as opposed to, oh, I'm going to just love everybody and everybody's going to love me. That's too easy. It's too easy. That contributes to my cynicism more than anything else because it seems such a far stretch. So maybe that's what I should be looking for, but that's not, you know, it's more like what you're saying is just because, you know, this guy and I don't like each other or we kind of hate each other when we're, online having messages. It's like, it doesn't mean we can't see, you know, he may or may not do it, but we can't see our common ground when we're in a meeting. It's beautiful.
The parts that stood out for me in this, I mean, the first thing that she said when she didn't take personal when people disagreed with her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's such a hallmark of emotional sobriety is that I don't let what other people are doing define how I feel about myself.
Yes.
That I'm able to keep a sense of myself, even if I'm getting criticized, or if I've had people say that I'd rather get reserved licks than that. I mean, but when I first came to the programs, that was the personal issue. I mean, I'd be affronted by that, and what's wrong? You think I'm stupid? Or, you know, whatever way I would take it. And it might even have been an argument or a fight. So I think the fact that she showed a lot of equanimity in terms of how she handled that was a sign of her emotional sobriety network, his emotional sobriety network to program. The second thing that I thought was great is how he owned some of these thoughts he would have when people would walk in a meeting and how he could just own them and not have to act on them. And see, a lot of people don't get that, is owning what's going on. It's not the same as then having it and reacting to it and manifesting it. You don't have to if you own it. Then you dissipate some of the energy. So like when he's talking about hitting on the newcomer gal in the meeting, right? I mean, you know, most guys have had thoughts like that. But this guy neutralized it by what he said and how he said it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was also very important in terms of what showing this guy's emotional sobriety, that he's really trying to stay true to his values and not do something that would compromise his values just because it would feel better.
Then,
he's operating from a value that's greater than just immediate gratification.
Yes.
Now, not all the time, because if he did, then, you know, it would be a different story, but it was really great that he could share that and talk about that. So that's, I think, a real plus in terms of.
Well, and there's a commonality, a bit of a theme between what I said and what you said, Alan, is that it's definitely for me one of the tenets of emotional sobriety, and that is something you and I talk about a lot, which is what I call the power of lowering expectations, is bringing the expectations down to being realistic. It's like, you know, what you're saying is, you don't need to judge yourself for having a thought. You know, ethics apply to behavior. Ethics apply to behavior, not to thoughts and feelings. And you think about how much time we spend. Most of us have spent feeling guilty and sometimes deep shame about thoughts and feelings we have. Resolution of that is what you're saying, Alan. Own them. Do the next right thing.
That's right. The other thing that stood out, being aware and making other people as important as yourself and not less than or more. See, that's a hallmark of self-esteem. He had an awareness of himself and others, which is we talk about emotional sobriety being a balance. And it is a balance between the awareness of self and others. You know, it's with that we can act for ourselves without being selfish, and we can act for others without being selfless.
Right.
So I think that he embodied that very well in terms of how he dealt with this situation and the meaning he gave to it.
I love how he expressed that in terms of the difference between those who came in as visitors to the meetings in jail and those who were residents there. And it's like, you know, he didn't say, I don't remember the exact thing, but he didn't say we're just the same, because, you know, very different circumstances, very different things. But what he said, again, we found the common ground. It's like, we could know these differences and still speak to our common ground, our similarities. It's, yes. You know, I'm in Nashville, and I got sober here in Nashville, Tennessee. I became aware later that you could be in a different city, and you could, you know, we all have those little judgmental guys on our committee, and you could kind of tell where people come from in the socioeconomic strata, you know, looking at people and how they dress in the meetings and stuff like that. And I don't know how it is in LA, you guys, but it's like in Nashville, you can't tell, you know. I mean, it's like I love some of the meetings, especially some of the meetings I went to when I first was going, were in areas where frequently, you know, there were several homeless people in the meeting, and it wasn't unusual to have, you know, people that you would recognize because of they were musicians and famous. And it's like, first of all, you just saw people ignore that entirely. But the other thing I always thought was funny is if you dared try to judge somebody in the socioeconomic stuff, the sloppiest dressed human being in that room was very likely the richest. You know, it's like you couldn't tell by how people presented themselves, and I really got to where I really enjoyed that, because I thought that's pretty nice that we can actually, it's like shuffling the cards. You just can't find if you're trying to judge, you're not going to be able to find anything there.
Well, that.
Yeah.
So, you know, once again, I mean, I think that it's wonderful, the Grapevine is doing this stuff and bringing this message about emotional sobriety to others. And I hope that those of you that are listening to us, are seeing that emotional sobriety has a lot of dimensions to it. Yes, it's it.
You got the dog.
Oh, okay. Look.
We got the other dog. You know.
Cece. Hey, Cece. Hi, Cece. Wave to me. Please.
Can you wave to Tom?
Come on, Cece. Thank you. All right. I got Cece's hand. Hi, Maddie. I love your doggy. Love both your doggies.
Cece's dog is about like 10, 12, 10, 11.
What's Cece's dog's name?
Cece's dog is Lovey. Lovey.
Lovey.
Lovey came on Valentine's Day.
Oh.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
You saw when you were
Lovey. Yeah, you still have Rocky, right?
And Rocky has, they sleep on Rocky. They have fallen in love with Rocky. And he's like their big brothers in some way.
That's the way my golden ones I have so many pictures of little kitty cats just snuggled up to him. And he actually, even little girls, there were some people that would come over here that we always called the Dakota's friends. And I have some great pictures of just these two little girls just sleeping on pretty much on top of the golden, you know. He's just such a gentle soul. Yeah.
He is a gentle soul. And now he's playing with them. So he'll start to, the first
oh oh no him. You'll see the puppy come out in him. When we got Lucas, we had an old dog, and we always watched her puppy come out. It was great.
Yeah, it's fun. We're starting to see that a little bit now. Yeah. So it's been great. I love having these animals. A little more work. I wish my leg was better so I could help out more, but it's really the girls.
I know. Well, and by the way, so we can make everything about emotional sobriety and make that connection. Our four-legged family members are wonderful role models for us.
Yeah.
You know, so what would my dog do is a good question to ask.
Oh, and I'll add to that there's a dog that I've been looking after recently who is sometimes in a grumpy mood, and I've been learning not to take that personally. You know, it's the dogs being a dog.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, man, when a dog that cute just kind of gives me the cold shoulder, It feels like, God himself has, turned his back on me and has turned the dimmer switch on. But I know that's not true if I really search myself. Yeah.
That's nice.
Well, good show, you guys. I need to stop. I'm in a lot of pain.
I know. You go rest, buddy.
I love you guys.
Love you.
Take care.
Tend your life. Tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you are.